Right, the focus of my presentation is the two sites which are arguably the most important of the stone quarries of the Eastern Desert area, Mons Claudianus and Mons Porphyrites, whose products were exclusively, or very largely exclusively, to furnish the imperial building projects of the emperors themselves, and imperial sculpture, and in the case of porphyry, also imperial burial places. I can hardly talk about this work without paying tribute to my colleague David Peacock, who sadly died very suddenly last year, but who is the architect of the work on the quarries of the two sites. The two sites lie, both of them, firmly within the mountains, but rather differently situated. And this has provided differences in terms of the way the sites were exploited. Mons Claudianus is pretty well at the watershed, at the highest point, which means that when we go from the settlement areas up into the quarries, there is not a very considerable rise in terms of the height of the two areas. Porphyrites, on the other hand, lies very close to the edge of the mountain massif, and as you will see, the geological resource which provides the stone is therefore very much higher above the settlement itself, and this gives rise to a totally different pattern of settlement. The archaeological aims of the two projects were very much the same, in the sense that both were intended to make intensive and, as far as possible, total survey of a degrading resource in terms of mapping the settlements themselves and the quarries which formed the raison d'etre of those settlements, and thus to try to elucidate the technology of the quarry working, and then to undertake necessarily selective excavation in order to provide dating material for the developments of the sites, to provide cultural material for the understanding of the sites, to provide material to show the trading contacts, and also environmental material to put the sites firmly within their environmental context. Now, when talking about Claudianus, I, in fact, will move first of all to a site nearby, what might be called a satellite site of the Claudianus complex, but which was also shown to be its forerunner. Among the documents that were retrieved from Claudianus, there were several which referred to a locale, Tiberiane, which was clearly an area where quarrying was being undertaken. This recalled to mind very nicely Pliny the Elder's reference to a stone known as Tiberian stone. And it proved possible to identify the site of Tiberiane as this small fort site here, which lay a few kilometres to the southwest of the focus of Claudianus proper, which was, in terms of what could be seen now on the surface, a relatively small quarry undertaking. Here you can see just the three quarry areas which were exploited, and the slipways and associated, there was a cemetery area, watchtower up there, and the small fortlet. Its identification as Tiberiane, well, the nature of the stone itself, which fitted in with Pliny's description of a black spotted stone. Small-scale excavation in the area of the rubbish dumping outside the fort unfortunately did not produce conclusively early material, and in fact the material that was retrieved was very much coeval with the major settlement at Claudianus itself. But lurking underneath this somewhere, there is very likely to be a settlement of the Tiberian period. A full survey was made of the fort, which had been plotted by earlier explorers in the area, but not in the detail which the project was able to do it here. So focusing on Mons Claudianus itself, one comes again to an area which has more than one location associated with it. Mons Claudianus, one of the sites which we're able for a long time to have known by its Roman name because of this inscription referring to the marble works of Mons Claudianus in the Tiberian period. But the name Claudianus, why Claudianus? We clearly here appear to have a reference to a Claudian of some sort, and the material known from the site, inscriptions long known from the site, had pointed to nothing earlier, in fact, than Trajanic or Hadrianic. Where was the earlier material? Up here, the major Claudianus focus, down here, a satellite site known as the Hydruma, but which, on excavation, proved, in fact, not just to be a satellite, but to be the forerunner of the Claudianus site proper. Here a plan produced of the remains, which shows a small fortlet here with an associated cistern, the type that we've seen in previous presentations. A less regular settlement along a small wadi here, and a large, fairly high status dwelling up on the hillside to the north. The fortlet itself, with a central corridor and rooms off it on either side, in terms of its layout, it is very, very reminiscent of the earlier site at Semna, in the Wadi Wikala, leading into Semna, where we have an inscription of AD 11, the earliest evidence for the exploitation of the hardstone quarries in this area of the Eastern Desert. It was just, as it were, a slightly larger version of it. Excavation was focused on rubbish dumping around the area of the fortlet, and it produced what was to be the very earliest material from the whole of the Claudianus complex. The only Neronian ostracon that we had, and a couple of Neronian coins from this trench down here. Now, a couple may not sound very many, but there were only three Neronian coins from the whole of the excavations, which in terms of the area that was investigated in the main complex was fairly extensive. So it does look as though here we have an earlier strand, Claudius, Tiberius Claudius Nero. Is this perhaps how far back one can trace the development of the site here? So Tiberian Barud coming a little bit further north, a Neronian focus here, and then perhaps our major Claudianus complex developing slightly later. Magnetic susceptibility studies on the stone itself. And I focus here particularly on the stone from the Neronian site of the Domus Transitoria, which has the advantage that since it was destroyed within the Neronian period, doesn't have any later intrusive material within it. If you look at the distribution of the quarries which produced material for the Domus Transitoria, which are the larger of the spots here, you'll see that one of them is by the Hydruma, but the others are over in what was to be the major quarry field over here. So it's hardly surprising that development moves into the area, the well-known site at Claudianus, where we have a fort, one of the larger ones, in the eastern desert area. Next door, granaries, animal lines, a large well, a temple, and I'll call a mansio, out to the north, and around it, very extensive areas of rubbish dumping, which were so very, very prolific in most materials, notably ostraca. I think somewhere between 9 and 10,000 ostraca were retrieved from the excavations on the site as a whole. Here a composite plan of Claudianus, showing not just what it was always visible on the surface, but areas of hitherto unsuspected structures which underlay the extant buildings and had been buried below the later rubbish dumping. Excavations were focused on a variety of areas to get a representative sample around the site, to sample particularly the areas of major rubbish dumping. Work started down here, where it was clear that damage was being done to the rubbish dumping. There was a small area of excavation up here, which doesn't appear on this plan, in fact, where we were looking at the relationship between the main enclosure and the annex area off to the north, and a trench in the well area, in the hope that water supply would be absolutely essential, and therefore one would get the early strand of evidence coming out from the area of the well. The gate excavations helped to clarify the development of the gate with the familiar projecting towers, later strengthened, and later still the gateway part blocked and a clavicular constructed partway across the entrance. And it was the gate excavations which produced both the earliest and the latest strand of material from the main Claudianus focus, the earliest being this Domitianic inscription found in fragments, which was possible thanks to having the crucial bit of dating evidence here to put a firm date on and to provide a date in the Domitianic period. And that is the earliest that we get any sniff of occupation on the main Claudianus complex. And then at the other end of the occupation, this very fine ostracon, written in red ink rather than the characteristic black, and clearly written, shaped so that it would be seen, and is a dedication which dates to the period of Severus Alexander. And that basically took us to the latest period of occupation. There were a couple of coins, but only in the rubble from the decaying buildings, which take us a little bit later. But essentially, it became apparent that the Claudianus complex did not survive the troubles of the middle and later part of the 3rd century AD. In terms of the area looked at, we were looking at, sort of, as I said earlier, representative areas within the site and outside it. And the South Sabaq was an earlier focus because of the damage being done here and the apparent excellence of the preservation of what was seen on the site. Extensive dumping, starting in the Trajanic period, but appearing underneath it, and indeed partly interleaved with it, a small building. Dumping had already begun before the building was put in the about 107, 108, something like that. The building went on being occupied with rubbish being dumped behind it until the Antonine period, when the building itself comes to an end and the area is totally subsumed by subsequent periods of rubbish dumping. In terms of distinctive buildings within the interior, most of the rooms were sadly rather undiagnostic, but a couple of foci here in the corner of the annex and the corner of the main fort. In the annex, we had a communal kitchen area, a large kitchen area, dating to the later part of the second century AD. And in the corner of the fort, a rather fine latrine building, side by side with the occupation area, backing onto the onto the fort wall, and with access here up onto the rampart walk in the first phase, and subsequently dumping occurs, and a corner tower is added on in the area, and again finally the whole thing becomes consumed with rubbish dumping. The whole thing is buried, and indeed many of the rooms were shown to have gone out of use well before occupation had actually come to an end. In terms of which buildings were within the site and who was within the fort, there was a total conflation of material, which you might say was of a civil type and of a military type. But the problem was that so much of the material was redeposited, it wasn't really diagnostic in helping us to extricate, as it were, who was operating where within the interior. In terms of chronology, it was possible to extract some early features which dated the later Trajanic activity, and it is perhaps from this area here, the broken inscription of Domitianic date, which had clearly been up and on display, and when it had the name of Domitian erased from it, was subsequently broken into little bits, which I rather feel then were used in the construction then of the major Trajanic fort, which was put in. And if you look at the distribution of inscriptions around the site, the Domitianic one here, say possibly relating to this, Trajanic, Hadrianic, showing that it was in at that period that you get the very major development of the site, and it proved that this was extended in the middle to later part of the second century AD, and then with just minor amendments subsequent to that, prior to the whole-scale abandonment of the site. David Peacock's work on the quarries showed there to be about 130 individual quarry sites, and allowed detailed study of the quarry technology. The inscriptions there, which we're going to hear a little bit more about later this afternoon, and the technology of the smithing, so essential to the running of the quarries. In terms of quarry products, par excellence, Claudianus provided columns. And it is probably this fact which lies behind the enormous success of the Claudianus complex compared with its forerunners at Semna, at Barud, to the south. It was able to provide the materials for imperial building projects, as well as the occasional bath, one spoken on site and one now in the Vatican Museum. And if one looks at the datable context in which Claudianus material is found, we're starting with the Neronian period, coming right through to the Caracallum, the construction of Caracalla's baths, which fits in nicely with the Severan activity attested on the site. I put Diocletian's baths in blue because we're probably there talking about the use of spolia, because by that time, the site had pretty certainly come to an end. In that, it differed very much from its northern compatriot, Mons Porphyrites, where you have occupation going on right through into the 5th century. And the essential difference between the two sites, which perhaps explains why one went out of use and one continued in use, was the particularly distinctive nature of the product that comes out of the porphyry quarries. Although there is dark material, there is also the superb imperial purple porphyry, for which there was a continuing demand right through the Roman and into the Byzantine period. The Porphyrites settlement, as I mentioned earlier, on the edge of the mountain massif, tucked away within this massif and extending over a much more extensive area. I mark in here from one access there, which was the only access for wheeled traffic, a foot exit which could be made through a col over the mountain massif here, and then one of the first sets of animal lines to help take the materials down to the Nile. It is a much more harsh environment, and the quarries sit high up, 100, perhaps 200 metres above the wadi floor, in a very dispersed way, which results in this very distinctive dispersed settlement, set of animal lines here, the main administrative centre, shall I call it, of the quarries there, a little footpath station guarding the route over the mountain. Each of the red circles marks where there were quarries, and each quarry had its own accompanying village, because the effort of going right from the centre up to the quarries clearly was not justified. It was easier to have your settlement in association with your quarries. If you look at the trend of the evidence just of the inscriptions here from the site, you'll see there is a trend that has the earliest material out to the northern part of the site and your latest material down in the south. And investigation proved that very much to be the case. The main administrative centre of the site at the Porphyrites fort proper, where you have the fort on the slope just out of the wadi floor to prevent flooding, a temple site to the south of it, another temple out here, settlement in association with it, and the quarry sites high up on the mountainside above the settlement. Here seen in plan. In terms of numbers of quarries, Porphyrites does not rival the 130 at Claudianus, but the quarry areas themselves are considerably more extensive. What's happened to that? The areas that were excavated here were relatively modest, because the logistical problems were ones that we faced, and one could only bring in fairly small numbers to the site to work here. Also, the interior of the fort was very, very badly tumbled, totally subsumed with stone. So focus on getting cultural material from the rubbish dumps. Very interesting collection of ostraca here, the so-called bread archive, talking about the supply of bread to the quarry workers. And then some attempt to elucidate the development of the site, which looked as if it ought to have an earlier phase, i.e. an extension has been put on its east side, and indeed so excavation showed that we had started off with a smaller settlement and developed into a larger one. However, excavation also showed that there is nothing here at the main focus, which is earlier than the Messianic. A well in the wadi bed down below, with its enigmatic semicircle of piers here, was surveyed and reinterpreted as being the site of a sakia. The well was not central, as it was normally assumed to be. It was off to the side, providing the water, which then was pumped up here, and that helped to explain the presence on site of fragments of Sakya pots. Going to the very earliest phases of activity, we move to the north, starting with the Bradford village. Most of the individual locale around here were known prior to our project being launched. These two are new, and both of them were, in fact, discovered by Nick Bradford, after whom the Bradford Quarry has been named. Here you can see a slipway leading up towards a village, and associated with it a couple of quarries. General view of the hamlet, really, rather than the village. It never developed very, very large. And among the buildings, there was one particularly distinctive one here, which is the one rectangular one with the niche, and famously the foundation inscription for the site, a small stele, a dedication to Pan, recording the discovery of the quarries of porphyry stone and kinetites, that we don't know really what that is, and black porphyry, a tautological description which clearly was of Roman origin, not just what we call it nowadays, and establishing a Tiberian date for the first activity at the site. The northwestern, I should say, the village produced the earliest pottery that we had from the site, including some very nice groups of pottery which had basically been left in situ when the site was abandoned. The small-scale quarries up the hill from the village were never exploited to a large extent. This was where it was discovered, but from there movement went on. And although both black and purple porphyry came from here, it was never developed to any large extent. The larger extended quarries are in this area over here. And again, starting at the so-called foot village, which was named after the discovery of a large stone foot outside here, that again I suspect is a temple site. Again, a small settlement. And again, the quarry area itself, it was tested out, clearly not found to be of the best, and the best focus was shown to be over here, and movement, therefore, of the settlement to the northwest village, which is sculpted into the hillside part way up the mountainside. It's sculpted in and built up, making use of the maximum space you can get out of the contours. And a reconstruction there showing a torrent coming down through the middle of the site. And it was from that, in the earlier part of the 20th century, that there was retrieved this dedication, the previously earliest known piece of evidence from the site, set up by Apollonius, son of Longinus, in the year 16. We're not told which emperor, but if we move to the Hammamet quarries to the south, we have Apollonius, son of Longinus, 14th year of Tiberius Caesar, and in both cases they spell the month wrongly in exactly the same way. The material at the northwest quarries was village rather was not quite as early as the material from the foot village, but sorry from the Bradford village, but was of an early phase. It was earlier first century, but then in the case of the northwest village, taking us right through to the certainly the third and into the fourth century. Here you can see the areas of the ramps and the roads leading up to the quarries, which are on the top of the mountain, about 150 metres above the village itself. The quarries are precipitous. They are very different from the quarries at Claudianus. They had a rather a simpler method of extracting material and in some cases allowing it, as it were, to fall partway down the hillside until it was then picked up, worked, and moved down the ramps, which were sculpted into the hillside. And here you're right up on the top of the watershed view, looking down into the next wadi to the north. Here, two of the products from the site, which again included pillars, not quite at the scale of the Claudianus pillars, but nevertheless fairly substantial. Latest of the settlements in terms of the activity areas were the Lycabettus quarry and villages, here with the ramp leading up, a cairned ramp leading you all the way up to the quarries at the top, which again were very extensively exploited and produced dating material, which takes through into the 4th century, six from very, very small-scale excavations within the village, five coins of Constantine and Constantius, another one from the bottom of the hill, and the quarries up behind. And it's from these quarries that late imperial material is coming. These pillars from the Constantine's Lateran Baptistry, and these sarcophagi from Constantinople, which are going on in use into about 450. So we clearly have exploitation of this unique coloured stone continuing into the late period, a Trajanic Dacian statue from Rome and a Diocletianic imperial statue from Constantinople, providing the two sides of it, the export to the imperial capital at Rome, and then the export to the imperial capital of Constantinople, to take us right through the use of this site.